The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Ronald Coleman stars in The Halls of Ivy from 1950. We'll also hear an episode of Chick Carter, Boy Detective in Pursuit of the Fat Man from 1945 and the songs of Smilin' Ed McConnell on Aladdin Land. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY and 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, the songs of Smilin' Ed McConnell on Aladdin Lamp and an episode of Chick Carter, Boy Detective from 1945. Right now, Ronald Coleman stars in The Halls of Ivy from 1950 as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
If you like good beer, you'll find it pays to be curious and learn about Schlitz for yourself. And now, The Halls of Ivy.
We love the halls of ivy that surround us here today. And we will not forget, though we be far, far away.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. 5 people didn't go to bed at all last night here at Ivy. Grogan, the campus policeman who was making his rounds. 2 sophomores and a freshman who were investigating certain mathematical phenomena, such as the odds against drawing to an inside straight. And Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, the president of Ivy, who's been working at his desk in the study of his home since shortly after dinner yesterday. The chapel bell is striking 8 as his wife, the former Victoria Cromwell of the London stage, enters and says...
Good morning, Dr. Hall.
Good morning.
And congratulations. You've just set a new record for going without sleep. Any statement for the press, champ?
Yes, I'm glad to bring the cup back to Ivy, where it belongs. And I'm looking forward with great confidence to the international match in Brussels next spring.
Oh, poor darling. How do you feel?
Surprisingly well, if the ability to cope with whimsy on an empty stomach is at all indicative. Do I look awful?
Interesting, rather. One so seldom sees a chartreuse complexion.
Bad as that, eh? Well, it's worth it. One seldom sees an annual report as superb as the one I've just finished writing. Here, have a look.
Let's see. The state of the college.
Or, in the vernacular, out of the red and over the hump with Hall.
You sound enormously set up about it.
I've reason to be. I had no idea how much I'd accomplished last year until I put it all down in black and white. The endowment fund is up, the building fund is up, enrollments are up.
And what are you doing up? Will you be working very much longer this morning?
I'm ready for bed.
Well, good. Penny will be right in with your overcoat and hat.
My overcoat and hat? Vicky... We've been married long enough for me to make a confession. I never go to bed wearing an overcoat and hat. I'm one of those odd fellows who slips between the sheets wearing only pajamas. I know I should have revealed this before,
stop.
But I...
I told Penny to bring in our hats and coats because I'm taking you for a walk. A short walk for relaxation, a light breakfast, and then a good long sleep.
Excuse me, Mum.
Yes,
I brought your things. Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning, Penny. I'll take those. Thank you. You're looking well this morning, Penny.
Thank you very kindly, sir. And you're looking... It's a very nice morning for a walk.
You don't say.
Yes, sir. It snowed last night. The first real snow we've had this year. And it's ever so lovely. Makes one want to go out and throw snowballs at top hats.
Well, feel free to do so whenever the spirit moves you, Penny. I'm ready, Victoria. Penny, you didn't by any chance notice a snowman on our front lawn, did you?
Should I have, sir?
Well, after the first really good snowfall of the year, the students have the custom of building a snowman in front of the home of each faculty member. You've heard of that, haven't you?
No, sir.
And the more affection they have for you, the larger the snowman they build.
There ain't one on our lawn. Allow me, sir.
Why, I dare say the snow fell too late for them to have taken advantage of it last night.
Which way shall we walk, Toddy? Along Faculty Row?
Yes, that'll do nicely.
Be back in half an hour, Penny. That custom the students have. It's almost cruel in a way.
Not in the least. I admit it must seem so to those members of the faculty for whom very small snowmen are built, but they survive. Professor Heaslip, for example, has survived years of snowmen not much larger than a Drosophila fruit fly.
Professor Heaslip is lucky the students built any token of affection on his lawn. If anything, his personality suggests excavation.
And the report I've just finished makes it more certain than ever he won't get my job. His carefully cultivated friendship with the chairman of the board notwithstanding. It's really a smashing report, Vicky. I raised almost $1 million in endowments. Built
what? What's wrong?
Look, there's a snowman in front of Professor Quincannon's house.
Oh.
The snow came early enough after all.
Well, perhaps it wasn't the students, Toddy. Professor Quincannon has 2 children. They may have built it. Children build snowmen, too, you know.
Of course, that must be it. I mean, after all, there's no reason to suppose the students would build one for Quincannon and overlook me, is there? I mean, there's no reason to suppose they're antagonistic to me. I don't see why they should be. Do you?
No, of course they're not. You were telling me about your smashing report. Toddy, come on.
Oh, yes, my report. I suppose I shouldn't have said it's a smashing report. It's not really smashing, but it's a darn good one. I believe I may say, without immodesty, that I'm good at my job. After all, a college president must have ability and
keenness of vision?
Well, all college presidents have keen vision. A few, in fact, can even see themselves in the White House in 1952. You know, I knew a man once who...
I'm listening. What? What are you staring at?
A snowman in Professor Howard's front yard.
Oh, yes. Oh, I suppose Professor Howard's children must have built one, too.
Professor Howard is a bachelor.
Yes, of course. I'd forgotten. Well, then, Professor Quincannon's children must have come over from next door. I remember when I was a child, I used to build snowmen all over the place. Couldn't get enough of them. Fairly cover the landscape and build one in front of my house and one next door and then one further down the street.
Yes, they could have come over from next door, couldn't they? Quincannon's children, I mean.
Well, of course they could.
Yes, they could have jumped over the hedge, yes. or even come around that way through the gate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not much more than 30 paces. And you know, they're very active youngsters, positively hypothyroid.
Oh, they are.
Oh, one probably said to the other, let's build one now on old Howard's lawn.
Yes, exactly. As a matter of fact, I seem to remember having heard children shouting something like that earlier this morning. You were telling me about your report. Your report. I want to hear more about how darn good it is.
Oh, I suppose I shouldn't have said it's a darn good report. It's not really. It's a fair report. A little more. Vicky... darling, you spend much more time with the students than I do, really. What with your coaching the junior follies and all, you haven't heard any grumbling about my administration, have you?
None, Toddy, none.
Ah. It wasn't a very tall hedge, you know. Quincannon's children could have jumped over it.
Or crashed through. I mean, they're very sturdy.
Oh, it's the most natural thing in the world.
Yes, Toddy, let's turn down this street. I'm rather tired of Faculty Row. Same old hedges, same old houses. This street seems very charming.
Really? You find that row of garbage pails charming?
Oh, well, I suppose not. Oh, dear. There's a snowman in front of Professor Warren's house, too.
The young Quincannons have had quite a busy morning.
Good morning, Doctor.
Ah, good morning, Dr. Warren. Good
morning, Mrs. Hall.
Good morning.
Out for a stroll?
Yes, we're out for a stroll.
Well, I find there's nothing like it on a morning like this for getting rid of the doldrums, don't you?
Occasionally.
We were just admiring the snowman in your front yard. It has a great deal of character.
Oh, it's a pip, isn't it? I know it's not supposed to be good form for a faculty member to pay any attention to this sort of thing, but when you're 70, as I am, hypocrisy is too much of a strain. I just look at that gleaming monster and glow, Doctor, glow.
Well, I don't blame you. And yet, the custom in some cases can be cruel, don't you think? I mean, the ones that don't get built.
Nope. It's not the custom that's cruel. It's the crushing impact of truth. Some people can't stand up under it at all. You take a president of Ivy we had in 1900, that's before your time. Bessemer was his name. 1 year, every member of the staff had a snowman except Bessemer. Old Pop Gut Bessemer. He resigned a few weeks later, for reasons of health, of course.
Oh, that seems very impulsive of him, a little drastic.
Well, Ivy's a small school and always has been. Personalities play a much bigger part than they do at some of these giant diploma factories. You wouldn't care to continue as president if you knew that students had much rather tie a can to your tail, would you, Doctor?
Well, now, that's an interesting way to put it, but no, I suppose not.
Why, of course not. You look at it this way, Mrs. Hall. Teaching hardly ever pays off in money. The average prof makes only about $2,500 a year. And it hardly ever pays off in glory. I myself can name 10 baseball players, or burlesque queens, bless them, for every teacher you can bring to mind. Well, then, what makes an old party like me, the last of the tobacco-chewing professors, or a man like your husband stay with it?
Pride in the job, I suppose.
Pride in the job. That and the feeling that maybe we're helping the young savages become not scholars, but men and women, and that they appreciate it. Take that away and what's left?
Absolute zero.
Here I am lecturing the president. Tell you, when you arrive at my age and succeed in conning people to regard you as a lovable old gaffer, you get away with murder. Care to come in for coffee?
No, thank you. We have breakfast waiting at home.
That's the wisest decision you've made today. In all the world, no one concocts as nauseating a cup of coffee as I do. See you soon, I hope, ma'am.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Dr. Warren.
He's a pip, isn't he? My snowman.
The very word for it, he's a pip.
Careful, don't slip on that snow.
By the way, Vicky, did I tell you I received a letter from Quesnel University this week?
I don't believe you did, Toddy. Why?
Well, they haven't heard of the renewal of my contract as president here at Ivy, and they've made me a very flattering offer. Treasurer of the university. At almost the same salary I have here.
Toddy.
Further, and, perhaps of more importance, it's a purely administrative job. I wouldn't come into contact with students at all. Not ever.
Toddy!
They requested the courtesy of a reply this week. It's really a most flattering offer. I rather think I'll accept. Yes, I think it would be best.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
We'll return to the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman, in just a moment, as soon as we hear how a young actor got his first taste of fame.
Offhand, one would say there's scarcely a rhyme and hardly a reason for associating Shakespeare with Schlitz beer. But perhaps I better start at the beginning of my story. Our little theater group was putting on Romeo and Juliet, and I was this year's Romeo. Being handicapped by 2 left feet and an instinctive dread of high places, I don't mind telling you that climbing that balcony gave me a good deal of trouble in spite of considerable extra practice on my part. After our dress rehearsal, I still wasn't satisfied with my agility, so I decided to make a few practice climbs before calling it a night. As I reached the balcony the second time, I happened to glance down. And there below me, I saw the rest of the cast gathered around drinking beer. The labels on the bottles told me it was Schlitz. And the expressions on the faces of my fellow players told me I was missing something. I knew Schlitz by reputation, but not by taste. So I climbed down from the balcony to find out what I was missing. If you could have seen me standing there in full Shakespearean costume, tasting Schlitz for the first time, you might have expected me to say something like, "Upon my soul, what beer is this that lies so pleasantly upon the tongue?" But no, I just stood there speechless, grinning from ear to ear. The director, sensing my plight, said, "It seems that words can fail even an actor at a time like this. Let me say it for you. No wonder they call Schlitz the beer that made Milwaukee famous."
That surround us here today.
Returning to the halls of Ivy, we find a dispirited Dr. Hall strolling in the snow along Faculty Row with Mrs. Hall.
You're very quiet, Victoria.
I know. I'm concentrating. Trying to think of the right thing to say.
Oh, you don't have to say anything, my dear. The silent eloquence of the students has left very little unsaid.
Toddy, I know how you must feel. In a small way, I've been through it a number of times in the theater, playing for laughter and applause and getting the rustle of programs and a few coughs. You can say to yourself, chin up, and good show, and carry on, all that. And over it all, you can hear the lorries backing up to the stage door to haul the scenery away.
Well, this time, they're going to haul the actor away from the scenery. And after I'd convinced myself that I'd given such a sterling performance. Smashing report, indeed.
Would it help if I tried a recital of Kipling's If? It kills them in the provinces.
It's likely to prove lethal here, too. But thank you, my dear, anyway. As organizer and sole member of the William Todd Hunter Hall Fan Club, you've done some noble work.
Oh, Toddy, you don't have to try and laugh it off for me. Get it out of your system, darling. Blow up.
Curse the Board of Governors. And their promise that I wouldn't have to spend my time wangling emoluments. Curse my folly in believing them. To the devil with all fatheads who kept me away from the students. Bah!
Oh, that was lovely.
No wonder they feel no affection for me. I'm so seldom with them. Not that to know me is to love me, you understand.
I understand nothing of the sort. I know you very well and I'm mad about you.
How difficult it is to... Oh, thank you, my dear. How difficult it is to maintain contact with the student body. One college president I know scheduled a speech to the senior class for the sole purpose of proving that he actually did exist.
Oh.
And that's what's wrong with my report.
Toddy, I'm sure it's a superb report.
No, on the contrary. I omitted all reference, beyond a few statistics, to the most important part of any school, the students. And what they think about the state of Ivy. I should have found time to teach more courses. Look at Hutchins at Chicago and Conant at Harvard. The students are what make a college, not campus buildings and installations. Diogenes discoursed from a tub. And his students listened. And it was a school.
Toddy, look, talking of tubs, I see Professor Heaslip.
Where?
Through this hedge. He's just leaving his front door.
Is there a snowman on his lawn?
Yes, a very small one, which he has just made larger with two handfuls of snow. Oh, he's heard us and stepped back.
Well, hello there. Good morning, Skipper. Good morning, fair lady.
Good morning.
Good morning, Heaslip. It's a nice snowman you have there.
Yes, it's a very nice little one.
Oh, you should have seen it before the sun came up and melted it. Amazing how quickly it went. This is the warmest part of Faculty Row, you know.
Oh, really? I found the whole area very cold.
Oh, that's a mistake, Skipper. That snowman was inches lower. I mean higher a few minutes ago. It melted down considerably. Also, the boys and girls happened to have chosen a slight dip in the ground on which to build it. Actually much taller than it looks. Optical illusion, you know. Not that I pay any attention to such things, of course.
Of course.
I'm happy the students like me as much as they do.
Of course.
I've often asked myself why. Naturally, I don't court their affection. I'm a very strict but fair pedagogue, if I say so myself. Perhaps it's the occasional humor with which I sprinkle my lectures.
For example?
Yesterday. I was discussing nature references in the poetry of the more eminent Victorians, one of whom referred to a dogwood tree in some lyric or other. I asked my students if they knew how to distinguish a dogwood tree, and when they said they didn't, I told them. By its bark. Well, I must be getting to class. Good morning, Skipper.
Good morning, Heathcliff.
Good morning, fair lady.
Good morning.
The warmest part of Faculty Row, indeed. And yet, for the sake of that little snowman, I think I'd almost be willing to change places with Heathcliff.
It'd be a little bit rough on me.
What do the boys and girls, as he calls them, see in the man? Oh, it's true he has no enemies, but that's more than balanced for the fact that none of his friends like him.
Well, let's turn back, Toddy.
Oh, this is probably one of the last times we'll ever stroll along here, Victoria. It's an attractive little street, isn't it?
Yes.
I've lived here a long time.
And I've loved it here.
You see that house across the way?
Mm-hmm.
I had a furnished room there when I was an instructor. On the top floor. Kitchen privileges. Female visitors permitted only as far as the front parlor. Please turn out the light before leaving the room.
Liberty Hall, wasn't it?
Then when I was appointed assistant professor, I moved over to this side of the street. Sitting room, bedroom and bath. Hot plate permitted. No wild parties.
Oh, what exactly was a wild party at Ivy in those days?
If I remember correctly, more than two people laughing at the same time. but then I allowed my appointment to a full professorship to go to my head, and I rented that Charles Adams mansion over there.
Oh, it wasn't a Charles Adams mansion. It was a wonderful old place to live.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? I mean, after I brought you there. It was fairly empty when I occupied it all by myself. It echoed. Empty and unsatisfying, and nothing I did with it, new furniture, new drapes, fresh paint, seemed to propitiate the fat little gods of the hearth.
Until you offered them me as a human sacrifice, eh?
You might very well have been mistaken for a human sacrifice as I handed you down from the taxi that first morning. You were scared to death.
Yeah, I was. I'd never had a home of my own before. Just hotel rooms and flats and theater dressing rooms.
Now, here we are, driver. And this is for you. This is our home, Victoria.
Oh, William. It's exactly the way I imagined it. All covered with vines and so very peaceful and quiet. And, oh, look! My name's on the letterbox.
I sent a letter from England asking that it can be done.
Professor W. Hall and Mrs. Victoria Cromwell Hall. Oh, thank you, Toddy, for being such a dear love. Is it always as quiet as this?
Yes. Nearly always.
And empty. I don't see any students.
One of them has just seen you. You seem to have arrived in more ways than one. Come on, let's go inside.
Oh, please take my hand. I'm suddenly appalled at how little I know about taking care of a household.
Hang on tight, darling. I have shortcomings, too.
Promise you'll overlook mine until I've learnt my way around.
I promise. It'll be a mutual understanding. Now, what did I do with the key?
Can't you find it?
Well, I could swear I had it in my hand. I thought I... Oh, I do have it in my hand.
Oh, you're as nervous as I am, really, aren't you? I'm so glad. I keep on forgetting you're new at this, too.
There. No, wait.
What?
Wait. There's a little ceremony involved here, a very nice one. I'll carry you across the threshold, like this.
Oh, Toddy, look.
A snowman.
A snowman? What's a snowman doing in our hallway?
Well, don't you see it? The students must have come while we were out walking.
Yeah, but they've no right to build one inside the house. And where did they get the snow in May?
No, Charlie, it's a snowman. And it isn't May, it's February.
Yes, I know, but...
From wherever you were, dear, come back. You have a snowman.
Yeah, but I mean...
And it's the most enormous snowman you've ever seen. Right over there.
Oh, why, it is a snowman. In our front yard. Vicky, this is our house, isn't it?
Yes, of course it is. Oh, Toddie, you're always losing yourself in your thoughts.
Not completely, my darling, because you're always with me. But I don't understand this
Look,
snowman.
Look, there seems to be a note attached to it. Yes, it's addressed to you. Here, what does it say?
Well, one moment. To President Hall, the delay in construction is entirely your fault. If you must work nights, please do so in one of the back rooms and avoid those overlooking the front of the house. In that way, the traditional anonymity of the built... They misspelt anonymity. The traditional anonymity of the builders will be preserved. Affectionately, classes of 50 to 53 inclusive. Well, now. Of course, it was probably a good bit larger when they first put it up. After all, this is the warmest part of Faculty Row, you know.
Yeah, I know. Could you stand a bit of breakfast and some sleep now?
Breakfast, by all means, but no sleep as yet. Remember, I have the report to get out.
Another report?
The same one, but better. Far better and a great deal more inclusive. Directly after breakfast, I shall want to see the presidents of every class in my study. Yes, and the officers of all student organizations, too.
All at once in your little study?
Oh, we'll get them in, my dear. We'll get them in. Look at that snowman. It's good packing today.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
And now, here again is Mr. Ronald Coleman.
The campaign to fight heart disease, this country's leading cause of death, is now underway. Diseases of the heart and blood vessels take an annual toll of more than 600,000 men, women, and children. A staggering number indeed. This dreaded menace accounts for one death out of every three. A greater toll of lives than the next five causes of death combined. This year, give generously in support of this wonderful cause. Send your contributions to Heart, care of your local post office. Open your heart, give to fight heart disease. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
We'll be seeing you next week at this time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. The other players were Alan Reed, Gloria Gordon, and Arthur Q. Bryan. Tonight's script was written by Walter Brown Newman and Don Quinn. Our music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn and directed by Nat Wolf. From the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company and the Halls of Ivy, our heartiest congratulations to station WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut, on this, their 25th anniversary. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Oh, we love the halls of ivy that surround us here today, and we will not forget.
You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio in an episode of The Halls of Ivy, starring Ronald Coleman, first broadcast on radio on February 10th, 1950. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when The Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, an episode of Chick Carter, Boy Detective, in pursuit of the Fat Man from 1945. But first, here's smiling Ed McConnell as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Let's sing a song you don't hear every day. It's your old friend calling again. Hello, sweethearts. It's smiling Ed McConnell, the old Aladdin lamp man again. Have you heard this one lately? If we can't be the same old sweethearts, then we'll just be the same old friends. For I want someone like you just to tell my troubles to. My happiness on you, it all depends. For I've known you too long to forget you, and my old dream of love never ends. Though I know you can't be mine, we will meet from time to time, and we'll just be the same old friends. I don't know about that, huh? Would you all like that? Y'all play it sweet, now think it over here. For I've known you too long to forget you, and my old dream of love never ends. Though I know you can't be mine, we will meet from time to time, and we'll just be the same old friends. Well, honey, I don't know about that, but I do know good Aladdin light in the right places in your house can make the difference between groping in a dimly lighted corner of a room and being able to see well everywhere in the house. You know, there's a type and style Aladdin lamp that fits in every room in your house. Why not stop in our store and see these smart-looking Aladdin table lamps and floor lamps with those wonderful Whippolight shades to match? These are the famous greaseless and oilless shades that were originated by Aladdin in order to give you a prettier shade that is easier to keep clean and new-looking. See you at our store soon, I hope, won't I? And now for our hymn. There'll be light in the sky from the palace on high when I come to the end of the road. Sweet relief from all care will be waiting me there when I come to the end of the road. When the long day is ended, the journey is o'er, I shall enter that blessed abode. For the Savior I love will be waiting for me when I come to the end of the road. And that's the end of our visit for today. This is smiling Ed McConnell, the Aladdin lamp man, saying bushels of love and thanks for listening. We'll be looking for you again next time when we come back to sing a song you don't hear every day, when we all come calling again.
listen to the adventures of Chick Carter, boy detective.
Yes, it's Chick Carter time once more. Time to listen to the adventures of the world's youngest detective. Yesterday, Inspector Cobb of the World City Police told Chick of a very puzzling murder case and asked Chick's help on it. A wealthy lawyer named David Markert was found dead on a lonely side street in World City. He had been suffocated. The murderer had laid wet $20 bills over his nose and mouth and held him until he was dead. Later, Chick, Sue, Tex, and the inspector visited the murdered man's dingy apartment. Suddenly, the phone rang and a voice asked for the dead man. Hurriedly, the voice mentioned an appointment and then hung up quickly. Now it's 10 minutes after the close of yesterday's adventure. Chick, Sue, and Tex are riding a police car down toward the dock area of World City. Let's listen.
All right, officer. Cut the siren. We're getting close to the neighborhood, and we don't want to tip the man off.
Now, what do you make of it, Chick?
Well, obviously, the man who phoned doesn't know that Markert is dead.
No?
He's planning on meeting him somewhere along the Battery in the lower part of town.
He gave you an address, didn't he, Chick?
Yes, but he must have been scared. He hung up right afterwards before I could get the complete address.
13 Whitehall Street, and something about south of someplace, wasn't it?
Yeah. We're coming into Whitehall Street now.
Gosh, he sure is a crowded neighborhood. Look at them miserable buildings.
This is the lower end of town, Tex. The Baton Island ferry boat is right down there, see? In that big building.
Yes. Yeah, this is a tough waterfront neighborhood. Oh, officer, stop here, please.
Do you see number 13, Chick?
Not yet. Just don't want to arouse any suspicions. The police car's a little too conspicuous down here.
Yeah, blast my shooting eyes. Look at them houses all hunched up like that. I don't know how a body can breathe in crowded places like World City.
Officer, take the car up to the end of the street, please. And wait somewhere out of sight. We'll get in touch with you if we need you.
Okay, Chick.
Do you know which way the numbers run, Chick?
No, we'll just walk along the street and see.
You reckon you're going to run into anything, Chick? If that fellow was scared when they phoned you, he sure enough ain't going to hang around here and wait for the police to come down.
Well, he mentioned something about instructions.
Well,
I don't expect the man to be here, but perhaps there'll be something else.
I don't see any number 13 around here, Chick.
No. There ain't nothing but a lot of restaurants and some funny-looking shops and no 13.
You're wrong.
Huh?
Take a look across the street.
Why, Chip, there's nothing but sandwich shops and fish markets.
Yeah, that little Mexican restaurant is the biggest thing over there. And it's number 27 Whitehall Street.
Read the sign over the Mexican restaurant.
Mm-hmm. 13 delicious Mexican dishes. Dine at South of the Border Cafe.
Chip, do you think that's it? The 13 in the sign above and the south part in the name of the place.
I'll bet money it is. Come on. We're going over for some genuine Mexican food and probably a whole lot more.
I guess this was a shot in the dark, Chick. There ain't nothing in this joint. Pretty mealy, if you ask me.
Well, we'll wait a few minutes more. This table is placed in a little alcove, and you can see the floor distinctly without being noticed by all the other people.
Well, everything looks perfectly harmless to me, Chick. Just a lot of people eating.
Yeah. Anyway, it seems like home to get a nice dish of tamales. Have some more, Sue.
No, thanks, Tex. The roof of my mouth is scorched now.
Wait a second.
Huh?
This looks interesting.
Well?
Look over by the door.
You mean that big fat fellow that just come in?
Yes, he's looking around. He seems to be trying to find someone.
Well, maybe he's looking for his wife.
No. He's going up to the cashier.
Well, there's nothing to get excited about, is there, Chick?
He's just asking the fellow with the money.
Wait. Not quite. Look.
Huh?
He's giving the man at the desk a letter.
You think perhaps he's the one the message mentioned?
Maybe. Now look, that man's going to the back of the restaurant. Yes, he's going up the flight of steps at the rear. Tex, I want you to do something.
Sure, what?
This is a shot in the dark, but it might work.
Huh?
I want you to go up to the desk and ask that clerk if anyone has left a letter here for Mr. David Markert.
You mean the dead feller? The one that was smothered with the $20 bills?
Right. Leave your cowboy hat here. Lawyers don't wear them in World City.
Okay, partner. I'll see what I can do. I act just like a lawyer.
Good. And if that letter is for Markert,
Pay
your check and go out. Hurry down to the police car at the corner and wait for us.
All right. Here goes, partner. Here goes.
This looks like a very slim chance, Chick. After all, you have no proof this fat man has anything to do with the man who phoned.
Yes, I know that, Sue. There's not much doubt about this place being the one mentioned on the phone.
Look at Tex. The man at the counter is handing him the letter. You were right, Chick.
Well, now let him get out.
Look, Chick.
What?
The fat man is coming back. He'll see Tex.
Oh, gosh, come on. Come on, he's seen it already.
He's snatching the letter out of Tex's hand. He's going out the door.
Come back here, you cuss. You! I'll kill you where you stand.
Now, don't shoot, Tex. Don't cause any trouble. We've proved one thing. That fat man is the man who phoned, and that letter must be pretty important stuff. Come on, after him. Sue, run down to the corner as fast as you can. Tell that policeman what happened. Tell him what the fat man looked like.
All right, Chick.
Hey, Chick, look. There he goes. He's heading into that ferry boat building.
Sue, tell the policeman to call headquarters, to cover the ferry building and watch for the fat man. Tell him to get a hold of the Baton Island police just in case he decides to take the boat ride and be on guard at that end.
All right, Chick. I'll get him.
You come with me, Tex.
Right.
We're going after him. We've got to find that man before he gets away.
A few minutes before Chick, Sue, and Tex raced after the fat man with the letter, in a parked sedan across the street from the Baton Island ferry and the Mexican restaurant, two men watch the people on the sidewalks. One is Chatter Zipponi, a smooth mobster, and the other is Fred Dite, a killer. Zipponi is speaking.
What time is it?
Noon time. I'm hungry.
Shut up.
Okay.
This guy Hammond ought to show up pretty soon. You deal with these Park Avenue hotshots, they go yellow on you just before things start to happen.
Yeah, maybe his watch is slow.
You got stones in your head. Mrs. Oliver figured this thing out. Hammond and Mark was all set for their part. But naturally, they had to hire me, Zipponi, to put the finishing touches on it.
How much does this job pay?
What do you care? I always give you a cut, don't I?
Yeah, sure. Only when you're working with the Park Avenue Society, boys, I like to see you get what's coming to you, boys.
I always get what's coming to me. Remember that.
When do we pull the job off?
And that's what we're here to find out. The instructions were mailed to Hammond. He's supposed to leave them at that Mexican joint over there for another guy to pick up and deliver to us. We burned the instructions.
Huh.
Pretty good, ain't it?
Yeah.
Keeps all this Park Avenue crumb with clean hands. Nobody knows where the orders come from.
Hey, Chatter.
Huh?
Look over by that Mexican.
Where?
There's a guy tearing out of the door. Look.
Huh? Hey, that's Hammond. Come on.
Hey, nix it, Chatter. There's two guys running after him. See? One of them's got a cowboy hat on and some fancy-looking boots.
I don't like this. Open the door. We'll find out.
You want me to stop those two guys?
Yeah, get after him. Don't shoot unless you got it.
Yeah.
What's the matter with that guy, Hammond? He's running for the ferry boat. He knows where we are.
It's going to pull out in a couple of seconds.
Get on that boat. Hurry. Don't let Hammond or those two guys get away from you. And be sure he hangs on to that envelope.
Right.
He must have it on him now. Don't let the other two guys get it.
Don't worry, Chatter. I know what to do to guys who can't mind their own business.
Well, Tex, he's on this boat. I'm positive of that. There certainly isn't a sign of him so far. We've been all over both passenger decks.
There ain't no way he could have slipped out of here, is there? I mean, off the boat.
No, we just barely leaped on the boat as it was pulling out of the pier. The fat man was ahead of us. Don't think he'd be likely to leap into the river.
No, I don't reckon so. Not with the blocks of ice floating around in it like this. How about going upstairs again for another look around?
Okay, come on. He's either hiding in one of the cars below or in the engine room, I think.
We ain't got too much time, have we, Chick? She's just about ready to pull into Baton Island now.
Well, the police will be waiting at the dock. But I want to find that man first.
Mm.
He isn't apt to get away. It's just a process of elimination.
Mighty funny way to act, partner. And let me tell you, for a fat man, he sure can't run.
Yeah. They've cut the motors of the boat already.
Yeah.
We've got to work fast.
All the people are commencing to go up to the front of the boat.
Yes, we've got to... There he is,
Captain. Yeah.
Look, he's been in the life preserver cabinet on the side.
Yeah?
See? He's easing the door open. Come on.
With pleasure.
He hasn't seen us yet. We can surprise him.
He's heading for the dock. And he's going mighty fast. Knows somebody must be laying for him.
Come on, fast. Don't make any noise. Don't want to cause any scene. Now, just a minute. Not so fast there, please.
Why, I don't know you.
I'm sorry, but I have to talk to you.
What is this? A hold-up? Let go of me.
Now, there might be a hold-up at that. But I'm not holding you up, mister. Now listen to reason for a minute.
Take your hands off me. I'm a respectable businessman, and I'm not in the habit of being accosted by strangers on ferry boats. And if you're trying to panhandle, I'll turn you over to a guard. Now make up your mind. Are you going to let me alone?
Don't get excited. I've got to talk to you.
I won't let him get away, Chick.
Oh, so you've got your gang with you, eh? Well, you won't get away with this. There are a lot of people around, and I'll just make an outcry.
Go ahead and make your outcry, if you dare.
Just what do you mean by that?
You know perfectly well what I mean.
Getting awful tough for a guy who just don't want to be talked to, appears to me.
You're absolutely right, Tex. Well, how about it, mister? Will you listen to a little sensible conversation, or shall we save you the trouble and call the police?
Why, I don't understand. There's no use getting the police, I guess. I just was startled. All right. Tell me, what is this all about, and then I'm getting out of here. I'm in a hurry.
We're representing the police department. You snatched a letter from this man here in that Mexican restaurant back in World City. May I see it?
Certainly not. This letter was intended for a friend of mine, Mr. Market. This person here tried to steal it. I had every right to take it away from him.
Perhaps you didn't know that Mr. Market was murdered last night.
No. Oh, no, it can't be true.
Yes, it's true, but it hasn't been released to the papers yet. Now, look, there are policemen waiting at the pier. They'd like to talk to you about Markert. Apparently, you intended to meet him last night.
Why, yes, I did. I sent him a note, a business arrangement, but good heavens, murdered. It's fantastic.
Well, come on, we'll talk it over when we have a little more privacy.
You want I should go ahead and get the police, Dick?
We'll find them as soon as we get off.
Do I understand that I'm being put under arrest?
No, not at all. We'd just like to talk to you. Now, there's nothing to get excited about. If you're innocent, you have nothing to worry about. You know that.
Better hurry, Chick. Most of the people are off the boat.
All right, you guys. Let go of that fat boy.
Don't move, Tex.
That's right, pal. Don't move. And you stay where you are, cowboy.
Well, what is this?
You got that letter on you?
Yes.
Good. All right now, you two guys. I got a gun in your back. If you know what's good for you, you get inside that closet and stay there and stay quiet. I can rid you awful fast if you try anything.
Well, we'd be glad to. We'd just go right along like this. Just a little bit further. Now, see what you can do about this,
you crumb. I told you not to try anything.
Grab him, Tex. Quick, get his gun. Get him and get away.
No, you don't. Get back, you guys. Get back. Get back. Run, fat boy. Run. I gotta see that you're taken care of.
Run, Tex. We've gotta stop them.
Get back, you guys. Get back.
Stop, Tex. He's gonna shoot.
That'll take care of the two wise guys. Come on, my fat friend. That letter you're carrying is mighty important to the boss. We gotta see that you're well taken care of. And I don't want no cops sticking their nose in either.
What has happened to Chick and Tex? Have the mad gunman's shots injured them? Or have they escaped? And what's the secret of the envelope which the fat man is carrying? Don't miss the next exciting episode in the Adventures of Chick Carter, Boy Detective.
Mutual to YOU, that is all. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow, same wavelength, same time.
YOU to Mutual, your message received. We'll be waiting for you. Signing off.
Chick Carter, Boy Detective, is heard every weekday afternoon at this same time over most of these stations. Ken Powell speaking.
Hide your heart from sight. Lock your dreams at night. It could happen to you. Don't count stars or you might stumble. Someone drops a sigh and down you tumble. Keep an eye on spring. Run when church bells ring. It could happen to you. All I did was wonder how your arms would be, and it happened to me. Thank you. church bells ring. It could happen to you. All I did was wonder how your arms would be. It could happen. It could happen. It could happen to me.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, Jackie Paris saying it could happen to you from 1958. We also heard an episode of Chick Carter, Boy Detective from February 28, 1945, and the songs of Smilin' Ed McConnell on Aladdin Lamp. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.